Hi there, Grand Slammers. And welcome to another AEW Dynamite review. That's what I've decided. You know, if everyone's going to make their own clubs within AEW, might as well be the Grand Slammers. Right? I think that's a good side to be on. It feels all-inclusive. It always feels successful, you know? Yeah, you know, that's probably... If that's a faction that exists in the AEW cinematic universe, then, that's one I want to be a part of. Who am I? I'm Warren Hayes. Welcome to the review that we do here on the AEW, the Mr. Warren Hayes show. The great intro. That we do right here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. Or on your favorite podcast app. And you know the drill by now, right? Do I have to remind you? Just in case, leave a like and a subscription on YouTube if you're watching this on the channel right now. Or if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast application, likes and, well, likes, sure, if it supports that. But principally, five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, five-star ratings on Spotify. Those things help out a great deal. To get the word out there, to get the show running, to get things buzzing. Had a couple of days, there wasn't a Mr. Warren Hayes show proper this week, so on and so forth. If you're following the lore, and I apologize for that. But look, we're back in the saddle again with an AEW Dynamite show, the AEW Grand Slam show. Specifically, which happened on September 20 from New York City, New York, the Arthur Ashe Stadium. Now, we have been talking for a while. I know it's become discourse over the past couple of days, right? It's become discourse, this chatter about AEW attendance, right? Now, if you are a long time listener to the show, or even a short term, we've been talking about this show for a while. And not the show, excuse me. Yes, we've been talking about the show and the build up, but we've been talking about attendance for a while, saying that it's not great, you know. And we've been pointing out how it's underperforming, and it's still underperforming. But we're not going to do that specifically today because. Because there's not much that has changed. However, we will point out that apparently the walk-ups to this show have been significant, tremendous. Like, I believe the last time we were talking, we were at about 9,000 tickets distributed for Grand Slam, which, by all accounts, you know, was not a success. This is not something that we were sitting here clapping our hands and going, "Ah, just fantastic stuff." No, especially when you consider that last year, you know, we went through the threshold. We went over 10,000, and of course the first year at Arthur Ashe, that was they filled out the arena, and this one struggled. It struggled for weeks to get past 6,000 tickets, 7,000, 8,000. But apparently the walk-ups were tremendous because WrestleTix provided an update after the show started, saying the updated number was 11,263 tickets distributed. And that this is believed to be one of the best walk-ups in company history. WrestleTix also estimates that the paid figure might be around 9,500 to 9,800 tickets. Dave Meltzer, I believe on Wrestling Observer Radio this morning, as we're recording this on the 21st. Said that he reported as well, saying that, oh yeah, there's 11,000 people that were in Arthur Ashe for the show last night. So listen, if that's the case, hell of a last minute push. And they were going hard on media as well, right? you know, Tony Khan, MJF, I think they had Orange Cassidy out there doing media. They had a bunch of people. Didn't they have Orange Cassidy and Chris Statlander doing media? They were canvassing local New York media real hard. So that probably helped. Is New York just a walk-up crowd at the same time? That's also possible. You know, the matches were really only set last week, and, you know, and they got better builds last week, and then a few extra crumbs on Collision. I didn't particularly care for Collision this week, but the idea is that you want to get people to this big show, and I think they pulled it off. I think whatever they were doing worked. Now, were they, you know, if they're in panic mode every time, then, you know, these tactics also do have a shelf life at the same time. So this is where we're at right now. You know, and I know there's a lot of people part of this discourse and, you know, folks talking chatting in the Discord over in the Mr. Warren Hayes Show Discord. The link is in the description, by the way, if you ever want to jump in, and over on Blue Sky. There's a lot of discussion around the idea that tickets are overpriced, right? And while that might be the case, I sit firmly in the have a hot product and people will buy tickets to your show regardless camp. That's where I'm situated. Which is not to say that people who feel like these tickets were expensive and out of price and, you know, couldn't afford any and so on and so forth, I don't disagree with them. But at the same time, if the product was hot enough, no one would be having this discussion. No one is, you know... no one would be talking. Also, if the opposite was true, if the product sucked and the tickets were like $15, we wouldn't be having this conversation either. People would be saying, I'm not buying the ticket because the product sucks. And this is an interesting little double standard that we have going here, because over the past couple of, you know, pre-pandemic WWE and its live shows, you know, the tapings, the TV tapings, they'd fluctuate, right? Overall, good. But there were times where, it, you know, it just was not good. House show business was in the tank. It stunk. It was terrible. And no one would say, oh, it's because the tickets are overpriced. Now, people would say, oh, the product isn't good. But... AEW, and listen, I'm saying this out of pure love. I will die on this hill. Criticism comes from a place of love. I would not be sitting here week in and week out putting out hours of content regarding pro wrestling if I didn't love pro wrestling. And I wouldn't be doing reviews for AEW if I didn't love the product. Because true criticism comes from a place of love. Because you want what you love to improve. That's my approach, period. So when it comes to AEW, and there's this bubble that, or this wall of shields, if you've played role-playing games in the past, there's a wall of shields that's erected around the booking and the product, where it is very difficult to be objective and critical of it without people immediately throwing their hands up, right? And throwing their hands up and them's fighting words. Oh, you think this booking stinks? Oh, you think Orange Cassidy's not being treated well? Whatever. You know, people get up in arms really quickly. And I think there are a lot of people right now who are protecting the creative aspect of this of AEW for some reason. And are pointing to everything else except the creative. Whereas I believe that over the past couple of weeks, and I'm talking 2, maybe 3 weeks tops, things have felt more focused. Dynamites have felt more focused. Collision continues to be very good. There's always going to be a few missteps. Like last Saturday, I didn't think was all that great. But there will always be these little missteps and so on. But nonetheless, I would say overall, like outside of these 2 or 3 weeks, creative booking in this company has been all over the place. And I don't think it has been a... And there are certainly multiple reasons for that, which I hope are ironed out. Because I want this... when this company feels focused, it is great. Like this show that they put on. Like Grand Slam, which we're going to get to in a second. But it doesn't feel hot. And it does feel slapdash. And it does feel confusing. And that is part of the problem. I'm not saying that is that is exclusively the problem. But it is part of the problem. And I don't think becoming more like WWE is the way to do it. I think going back to sticking to your guns, what brought people to the dance in the first place is the better way to go. But we have to be open enough to realize that, look, the show doesn't feel hot. It hasn't been booked as a hot show. It doesn't come across as hot. So no one is throwing themselves at these tickets. Comparatively speaking, WWE looks, feels like a hot product. We can discuss on the level of creative there as well, which, you know, it's not for me. But you already know this. But they are selling out tickets like crazy. They're selling out their house shows. When they came to my hometown for a house show just a couple of weeks ago, $450 for a floor seat. No TV, just a floor seat. And UFC right now, setting up for Madison Square Garden shortly, and 900 tickets in the nosebleeds. In the nosebleeds. They're going to sell the tickets. And people might bitch. But if your product is hot, people will buy the tickets regardless and they'll fill out your venues. And to me, it's a pretty one-to-one relation. And don't forget, if you charge a premium price for something, it will always feel like a premium thing. iPhones never go on sale from Apple, from the manufacturer. They never go on sale. For instance. So it's the same situation here. To a degree, of course, I'm not comparing AEW to Apple. It's just, yeah. Something that came to my mind just to illustrate the point that premium prices make your brand, make your show feel premium. Here's the tale of two things here. Here's a very clear tale here that I'm of my own personal experience. When Forbidden Door was announced, I jumped on the pre-sale, got myself some tickets. I booked myself a flight to Toronto. I booked myself a hotel in downtown Toronto. And if you've ever booked a hotel in downtown Toronto, you know what kind of pricing that entails. I booked those two plus my tickets for 3 days. And then I bought Collision tickets on top of that. But Forbidden Door, because I was like, this is an event I don't want to miss. In a couple of weeks, in December, Dynamite, Collision, they're coming to Montreal, which is much closer to where I live. 3-hour drive at the most, 2.5 hours. I haven't bought my tickets to the show yet. It's doing very good, by the way. Well, very good for AEW averages. But thank God, because an empty Bell Center is disastrous. But I haven't bought my tickets yet. I'm going to wait a little bit. I'm going to get my tickets closer to the show. Why? Because I know right now the show is not hot. I'm going to wait for ticket prices to come down a little bit. There's no point in jumping in here. And I'll still get some good seating. I'm not worried. So what does that tell you? I'll let you draw your own conclusions, and we are going to start talking about Arthur Ashe, the show about itself. There's a theme to this show. When I say this show, I mean my show, but Arthur Ashe, ultimately. The theme of Arthur Ashe was people beating the shit out of other people. And I loved every second of this. I thought this was a tremendously good show. This was tremendous stuff. Everyone was just out there beating each other up. It wasn't even a question of, oh, you know, cool moves and, you know, we're doing spectacle and flips and there were some. But the idea here was people beating each other up. I'm a simple man. When it comes, it doesn't take much for me to get into pro wrestling, but it also takes a lot for me to get into pro wrestling, if that makes any sense. I don't need extra convoluted, super complicated things when the end result is two people in a ring, just leaving it all out there, beating the shit out of each other. This is what we got for 2 hours that flew by. 2 hours that felt like 45 minutes. I was shocked when we got to the main event. I was like, already? Yeah. And this is how Dynamite should feel. Every week, this is how it should feel. It feels normal because there have been so many Dynamites who fit that bill. Where you look at your watch and you're like, oh shit, we're already halfway through. That happens more often than not. This is how it should feel. This was a great pro wrestling show. Are there little issues with it? Are there little quibbles? Of course. It was, you know, not perfect, but it was great. What is a perfect wrestling show anyway? The Ring of Honor world title and the New Japan Strong Openweight title were on the line. Winner take all. And it was Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston finally wins the big one, defeating Claudio Castagnoli. And I, frankly, with them opening this, the show with this match, I was like, ah, Eddie's losing again, isn't he? Which wouldn't have necessarily been a bad thing. Because Eddie's whole thing is, like I said, he just can't win the big one. He always comes up a little short. That's the story of Eddie Kingston. He just always comes up a little short. But you know what I really enjoyed in the storytelling that Excalibur, and I think Ian Riccoboni, both of them worked in tandem on this, which I really, and I don't know if y'all picked up on this. But what I really appreciated going back is that both of these guys, commentary, let's put it that way, were putting over the fact Eddie went to Japan and he had to find himself. He finally won some gold, but he went to Japan to find himself. He did the G1, you know, to recenter and refocus himself. So he comes back a changed man, a new man, because of his trek in Japan, his experiences in Japan help mold him into a different Eddie Kingston fighting Claudio Castagnoli for the title. And I loved it. And look, it's not as if they flipped the story up. You know, this was just the wrinkle. This was the thing that when you look back, you're like, this is the story they were telling. This is the story they decided to tell with this. Eddie goes away, comes back. He's a better, changed man. And now he can finally win the big one. And look, but like I said, they didn't change the corpus of the story, which was still, they don't like each other. They really don't like each other. They hate each other, but not like visceral hatred. It's like, I want to destroy you kind of thing. It's like, it's a more, the hatred that these guys have for each other is very different because Claudio just wants to prove himself right while Eddie wants to prove Claudio wrong. That's, It's so basic. And look, it starts off and they brawl on the floor and they're just laying into each other, right? They're burying their forearms into the other guy's chest. You know, Claudio took his chest took a fucking clobbering on this one. And we get some moves and we get that tremendous sequence, right? The tremendous sequence where Castagnoli lands the Ricola bomb, Eddie Kingston kicks out. Then we get some back fists from Eddie Kingston, the half and half, another back fist, lands the Northern Lights bomb, Claudio kicks out of it, and I'm up on my feet. Castagnoli tries to fight back, he eats a back fist and a Kawada bomb. Just like Eddie told his hero, Kawada, he said, I'm going to finish him with the power bomb. He finishes him with the power bomb. And Eddie celebrates as New York cheers him on. Fantastic moment. Now, you can nitpick this all to fucking hell and say, Ring of Honor, you know, all this fucking bullshit. All this bullshit. Should have saved this for Ring of Honor. Why'd they do this here? It doesn't make sense. It's an AEW show. Who cares? Who cares? We got a cool match, and Eddie Kingston finally won a big match, finally won a world champion. He is a world champion now. This is something that has never happened in the career of Eddie Kingston. He is a world champion. Can't take that away from him. And he won it in his hood, in his hometown, with his people, defeating the guy he hates. I know we're all used to things, you know, oh, you have to let it play out. We'll finish the story and all that bullshit. Well, sometimes there's just a really good moment to end the story and you don't have to overthink it. And you don't have to... Overthinking shit in pro wrestling is one of the things that is harming pro wrestling these days. Just let things go with the flow. Try to be bold. Try different things. I have never had a problem, first and foremost, having Ring of Honor titles on AEW. I don't hear anyone, I don't remember anyone bitching when the AAA title, when the Mega title was on AEW TV quite a bit and defended at a pay-per-view. Where Christian Cage won, right? I don't remember people getting mad. I don't remember people getting mad at Eddie bringing out the open weight title, the strong open weight title. I don't remember. No, this is just people being petty, being stupid for the sake of being stupid because they don't like what's being presented there. They don't like the product, so they're going to nitpick for all the little fucking little nonsense bullshit that they can that they can pick at. That's it. Anyone who bitches about Ring of Honor on AEW, who cares? Who cares? If anything, it makes even more sense when you consider the bevy of people coming in with their titles from elsewhere. Even before Ring of Honor was on, coming in to defend them and do shit with, you know, because AEW's canon is pro wrestling. We've said this multiple times, and we will continue down this. The history of AEW is connected. It is within the history of pro wrestling. World Wrestling Entertainment likes to live in its own silo, likes to pretend that nothing around them exists. And they've done that for decades, so their audience is trained, like fucking Pavlovian dogs. To recoil at the idea of an outsider title. It carries the plague. That's what they have successfully trained their audience in believing. So a lot of people having only watched WWE in their entire lifetime, this is not a knock. This is just a reality. Some people having only watched WWE think that this is the only way to do pro wrestling. When in fact, WWE is the opposite of what you should be doing in pro wrestling. Every decision WWE has made over the years, over its 50 plus years existence, and especially since Vince Jr. took over, all the decisions that they took were best for WWE and not for pro wrestling. I always keep that in mind. So when I turn around and I look at this and I'm like, this is all cool, this is fine. There should be more of this. There should be more people with their titles coming on to this show. Because that's what happens in every other fucking promotion on planet Earth! I am so glad that Eddie Kingston did this. Because don't forget, this is a guy whose career was up in the air. And he's, look, I'm not going to go down the litany of things. He's spoken about them very openly and very in very vulnerable fashion. And, you know, in interviews, paper, video, he's a tremendous, authentic guy in a business of phonies. You know, of people, you know, where you're that are always putting on airs, are performing, are trying to work the marks, as they say. Eddie has always come off as extremely authentic, very real. What you see is what you get kind of guy. So when I look at him win this finally, and knowing everything that he went through, you know, being right down to WWE offering him a job as a referee, I'm like, finally, good for him. And yeah, he said it himself. This was probably his last big opportunity, you know, the AEW job. This would probably be his last opportunity. Because if he fucked this up, there was nowhere else to go. And there hadn't been a lot of places to go in the between. And he is a bigger star than he's ever been. He's on the biggest stage he's ever been on. He's performing. He's beloved by fans. His in-ring work is fine. He's a good pro wrestler. He's got his off nights just like everyone else, but we love Eddie because of who he is, because of his authenticity, because of how raw he is. No pun intended. So I'm happy. I'm thrilled, actually, for this. Then I get a little less thrilled because now we get into skits, we get into vignettes. Roderick Strong in his hospital room with the Kingdom, but I'm a little less excited when it starts. Give me a second here. When it starts, I'm like, oh God. And the Kingdom are there and they're thanking everyone for the balloons and whatnot because the neck's strong and all that. And then Adam Cole arrives, just as the Kingdom are about to leave, right? And Adam Cole's like, I got here as soon as I could. And Roddy just like lights up, says, Adam, you're here? Yeah. So the Kingdom hit the bricks. But then as they're leaving, Adam Cole's like, I gotta go. Well, you just got here. And I'm like, yeah, Adam, Jesus, you legitimately just arrived. It hasn't even been a full 60 seconds and you're like, hey, I came, but I gotta go. Is Adam Cole starting to come across as a bit of a dick in this story? I think he's starting to come across as a bit of a dick. Like he arrives. It's like, I don't know, I got here as soon as I can. Then, you know, the Kingdom dudes leave and Adam Cole's like, well, I gotta go. Of course. Roderick was like, well, you just got here. Like, I'm with Roderick on this one. But he says, look, I gotta go watch out for Max, you know? And then they do some cinema, you know, up close and, you know, out of focus, in focus, out of focus. And Roderick Strong sits himself up with the loudest fucking hospital bed in the history of hospital beds. Nah, look. I don't know, man. This was cinema. It was cinema. We were playing around with focal depth here. I don't know what to tell you. Christian Cage is backstage with Renee, offering Darby another shot at the TNT Championship in a three-way with he and Luchasaurus. Or as he had a slip of the tongue, said it's a handicap. A three-way match. And Sting isn't allowed at ringside, so that's happening on Collision, if I'm not mistaken. Chris Jericho then defeated Sammy Guevara in their match. for a match that I thought was lacking heat. You know, I really didn't enjoy their, you know, their love fest that they did last week, you know, with the video and their, oh, you're my buddy, you're my pal, but, you know, we got to fight each other. For me, it left me completely indifferent. Despite that, this was a very good match. And this is another example. Like I like to say, it's like, sometimes I can find the build shitty, but if the end result is a kick-ass match, there's a lot of things I'm going to forgive. Like, I'm not going to go back and, especially when you see how the story finishes in this match here, I'm not going to go back and you know, break everything apart and be like, oh, well, they should have done it. It doesn't matter. The match was good. It had a great post-match angle. Look, first of all, the match. Here we go again. Guys chopping each other. We're doing it again. We're doing moves here as well, right? Because Sammy, he likes the moves. He likes to do the, you know, he does this and it's like, all right, Sammy, just fucking do it. We know you're nuts. It's fine. And Jericho turned up here. Again, usually he does when it's time for it, when it's time for a big match. And there you go. You got yourself Big Match Chris here. Double underhook backbreaker. He pulls out here, twisting Tope Con Hilo by Guevara and a flying crossbody as well. Codebreaker by Jericho and a suplex off the apron. It's so simple, but I always love that. I love it when Jericho cracks that out. Spanish fly by Guevara. Lariats by Jericho. A codebreaker by Sammy Guevara, who also does an Orihara moonsault. Jericho gets in the walls at some point in the match as well. Top rope cutter by Guevara. He also goes for a lion salt, but Jericho lifts the knees. And the finish, I liked it. Sammy goes up, shooting star press. It is countered midair by a codebreaker by Chris Jericho, who got the win. Hey, you know, you're getting caught out of the air doing this big high impact move onto a codebreaker. Sure, we don't need the Judas effect here. That's fine. Pardon me. So after the match, I'm sure you've all seen it by now. It's all over social media. Like, they did the WrestleMania 19 Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho callback. I'm sure you've all seen it by right now. You know, the Sammy and Chris hug. They release the hug and then Sammy kicks Jericho in the no-nos. And then Jericho collapses on his knees and, you know, clasping onto Sammy. Exactly like how it happened with Jericho and Shawn Michaels. And yeah, Sammy even had trunks in the same color scheme as Jericho's gear at WrestleMania 19. So, you know, I think that kind of stuff is fine. Like, even if you didn't get the references, it's still a good angle. But when you get the references, you're like, all right, this is pretty cool. This is pretty fun. See what I tell you? The canon of AEW is the history of pro wrestling. And then as everyone starts booing Sammy, Don Callis struts to ringside. And Sammy is clearly a member of the Don Callis family. Why don't we finish this off a little later on? Rene Paquette is trying to interview Sammy Guevara backstage. Don Callis, you know, says, no, we're not talking about this right now. We're going to address this on Rampage. And then they run into Daniel Garcia, and Garcia's sort of like, oh, you motherfucker. You know, so. And they, you know what? I'm glad that they decided to go with Dan Garcia getting into Sammy's face for doing what he did to Jericho, because Garcia never really liked Sammy. Like, they got along more often than not, but, you know, they were never best friends and they were never positioned as being best friends. They sort of, you felt that it sort of became a relationship of convenience. And that's, you know, Garcia was just putting up with bullshit here. But, yeah. I think this rules. Let's go back here. Maxwell Jacob Friedman, MJF, arrives in a Ferrari at the arena. And he says he's been holding a grudge against Joe since the shove. Adam Cole is also there, by the way. They're all outside. Then as he's doing his, as he's finishing up his promo, Adam Cole's phone rings, and it's Roderick Strong who's there. He's trying to tell you he's dying, and Adam Cole's like, no, no, you're not dying, you're not dying, which leaves us wonder, will Adam Cole be there for the big match? Well, we'll get to that in a second. AEW International title, Rey Fénix defeated Jon Moxley to become the new international champion. Oh yeah, let's get to it. And again, another great match where guys just want to, look, I'm telling you, it's just beating people up. Starts on the ramp, Mox is egging him on, and they start just like start whooping at each other. And then Mox falls, they're on the ramp, and you know, they have the ramp set up as a stage, so Mox falls off the stage, and then Fénix does a dive off the stage to the floor. And you can see, like, it is at that moment there, not during the Fénix drivers at the end that the safety police would like to have you believe that was the issue. That is the moment Jon Moxley got his bell rung. And you can see it. I rewatched it. His head lands really hard on the floor. And you can see him. He does the stiff thing. You're like, oh, none of this is good. None of this is good. And you can tell even shortly thereafter when, you know, Fénix is picking him up and Mox seems uncooperative. He seems to, you know, not quite selling as well. You know, there's something going on with Jon Moxley. And I had noted this in my notebook here, even before the whole shenanigans at the end happened. I'm like, no, he got his bell rung here. Something happened here. But he seems to be back in form when he no-sells a lucha arm drag and then clocks the hell out of Fénix. So it would appear that he's shaking off some of the cobwebs. I'm not saying he's back, but saying he's doing a little better. Mox then gets Fénix on the floor, does a death rider on the barricades. Frog splash by Rey Fénix, King Kong Lariat by Mox. Rey Fénix then lays Mox across the barricade on the floor, goes up top, jumps off and stomps Mox like on the back of the head, sort of upper shoulder kind of thing. Snap Death Rider by Mox, which I thought was absolutely phenomenal. Covers Rey Fénix, kicks out. Gotch style pile driver by Mox. Springboard coup de grace by Fénix, which was also something. And then there's a stomp by Mox on the ramp that triggers people into singing Seth Rollins' tune, Freakin's tune. Mox lands a pile driver, Senton Atomico by Rey Fénix, and then lands the Fénix driver. And this is where things start getting muddled. He lands the Fénix driver, covers, and Knox, the referee, doesn't count the whole thing. He sort of lays his hand under and he's like, no, he doesn't count it as a shoot. Again, I rewatched this because I heard, you know, a couple of people were talking about, hey, this is what happened. I rewatched it and you can clearly see Jon Moxley telling Knox, fuck you, when he stopped the count. And commentary was trying their best to try and save this one. And saying, oh, Jon Moxley twitched. Come on now. Come on now. They were doing their best, though. So what do? They do the spot again, the Fénix driver again. Now, from what I understood here, Moxley did tell Fénix in the match, you're going over, because he wasn't feeling good. But the information didn't get to Knox. Regardless, I think Knox should... Look... In my semi-knowledgeable understanding of pro wrestling, and or at least having watched it quite a bit, Knox should have called this as a shoot regardless. He just should have done the 1-2-3. Should he have been properly informed that the planned finish was being changed? Probably, but you know. Maybe Mox thought he did. Mox had a fucking concussion. Phoenix is not a, you know, he's not a native English speaker. What do you want from, what the fuck was Knox supposed to do here? Because I really think this is not the plan finish. Let's start, let's go back to this. I really don't think this was the plan finish, because otherwise, what the hell were we doing with Orange Cassidy then? You know, what the fuck were we doing here with Orange Cassidy? This doesn't make sense. Loses it in a brutal war, then 2 weeks later Mox drops it? No, come on. That doesn't make sense. And I think Moxley did the right thing if he felt as such, you know. And again, this is something that a lot of people are having trouble wrapping their heads around, because, you know, you have to stick to the finish so hard in WWE that, you know, but this kind of stuff actually makes sense. So from the get-go, like, I really don't think this was the planned finish, but if everyone in the ring was like, no, we got to do this, well, then let's go to it. And like I said, Mox might have thought that Rick Knox heard the call, but Mox was loopy. So maybe he didn't know for sure. And again, Rey Fénix, English is not my first language. I don't know how do I communicate this to the ref? Maybe it was, and maybe it was handled poorly. We don't know. And these are all fucking split second things. We're sitting here with the benefit of hindsight and not being in this high pressure situation where you have to make split second decisions on the fly, right? And you have to be like in the right positions. So, like, we can be here and judge this all we want. Ultimately, I think my biggest gripe here is that Rick Knox should have called it as a shoot. Period. Whether he knew it or not. He's not lifting his shoulders. Just go to the finish then. That's all. It's not your fault, Rick, if you called it as a shoot. Which I believe referees are supposed to do. So, out of, you know, we have a surprise championship win here. Rey Fénix gets single gold in AEW. As commentary said, the international title, once known as the All Atlantic title, back to Death Triangle. I got nothing bad to say about this. Like, the result in and about itself is cool as hell. It's been reported. Dave Meltzer said that Mox suffered a mild concussion. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to play this down. This is a medical term. All concussions are serious. You know, then people are going, oh, finally he's going to get his time off. Guys, don't be daft here. He's going to have to go through concussion protocol, and it is a concussion, and they should be taken seriously regardless. Mild simply indicates the severity of the symptoms. If you want me to nutshell a little bit, that's all it means. It wasn't like, oh, he just was a little dizzy, it's not so bad. No. Well, yeah, I mean, let me say that again. Maybe he was just a little dizzy, but it was still a concussion. What is that? Oh, well, it's just tiny brain trauma. Don't worry. It's still brain trauma. And we're not trying to downplay the fact that he got concussed here. And an accident. This shit happens in pro wrestling. You know, how many times has Rey Fénix done this dive? And how many times has Jon Moxley caught a dive? Huh? Just so happened. That one didn't quite work out. Brian Alvarez on Wrestling Observer Radio said that basically said that Mox didn't get hurt on either of the two Fénix drivers. He got knocked out on the Fénix dive early as the match went on. He didn't feel good, and he called the audible himself so that Fénix would beat him. Mild concussion. So we might lose our, we might lose Mox for a while. And it's not a vacation, folks. He's not, finally he's getting his time off. He's injured. Which just goes to prove, again, that wrestling fans still have a very difficult time understanding what a concussion is. It's not just like being knocked out. It's brain trauma. That's what our boy suffered. He's hurt. But we'll see how long he's going to go through the protocol, and he'll come back when he's ready. And the thing with Jon Moxley is that when he comes back, he's probably going to challenge Rey Fénix for the title, and they're going to work this into the story. Just like they did with Hangman Page getting knocked the fuck out. They're probably going to work this into the story as well, as they should. Don't shy away from this. You don't have to be protective of it. Just like, no, I had to take some time off. Now I'm back. You know, you knocked me out. Now I'm back. I'm at 100%. Time to go. All right. And he'll probably win the title back. Other than all of this, these things overshadowing, I thought this was another great match. I thought this ruled. Samoa Joe cuts a promo backstage to hype up the main event. Then we get some pre-tape from the Hardy Boys, the Kingdom, the Best Friends, and the Righteous. We're going to have a number one contenders match for the Ring of Honor titles at Rampage. And we're going to... Oh, God. So the... I don't know if I need to talk about this now. We'll get to it. But this is all up in the air now. Because someone got hurt. And it's not Jon Moxley. Saraya retained her AEW Women's World Championship against Toni Storm. This was probably Saraya's best AEW match so far. But, you know, I'm not screaming at the top of my lungs that you need to go see this. This was actually in this evening where everyone was beating the tar out of each other and just whooping each other. This was the exception. The exception that confirmed the rule, essentially. Because what we had here was shtick. Was a lot of nonsense. A lot of shoes. And the match finishes when Toni Storm goes ass first into an exposed turnbuckle. And that ruins her enough for Saraya to land her finisher. I think it was a nightcap right off the second rope. I like Toni Storm's gimmick. I'm enjoying Toni Storm's work. I think she should have won the title back. I think this is Saraya has her nice little moment. It's all fun and games in London in front of her friends and family and country people and all that good stuff. But then turn back around, come back to us with Toni Storm winning the title again and giving us something that we can actually sink our teeth into. I've got nothing for you on this match. This was the one that stuck out in a show that was just so good. I was like, oh, really? Now the thing that I'm wondering here, because you know, I'm sure you all saw the rumors. I even heard tons of rumors. I thought this was... Anyway. That Mercedes Moné is, you know... I think it's all but inevitable at this point that she's going to end up in AEW for a contract, for a few dates. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Do you think that they're just... that we're going to be in some kind of holding pattern with Saraya while Mercedes gets better? So that Saraya and Mercedes will have a match? I hope we're not going to get into a holding pattern. We get MJF doing a parody of the Bret Hart go get him, champ, bit, you know, like the kid saying, go get him, champ. And then MJF walks over, obviously doesn't give him the glasses, he gives him the scarf, and then he whispers something into the kid's ear, and the kid looks up at his dad, who's standing next to him, and said, Dad, I'm adopted? And that was funny. Which leads us to the main event. World title match. MJF successfully retained it against Samoa Joe. Tremendous. Tremendous match. Again, within the theme, everything rocking and rolling. People just, two guys just beating the shit out of each other. That I was super into right up until the finish. And I mean, this match was tremendous. I thought this was great. High level great. Another match where Joe is just beating the shit out of the champ and MJF is channeling this insane babyface energy to get the crowd on his side. And then we get to the finish. And Samoa Joe here in this match, though, before we get to that, he's working the neck. The neck is the story here. This is going to be MJF's story here for a while. Works the neck, does the running kick and senton. MJF hulks up, does the kangaroo kick. It's over. The kangaroo kick is over with the crowd. What do you want from me? Joe lands a tremendous neck breaker on the side of the apron. That popped me out of my seat. And again, you have all the... This is where I know I've watched a lot of wrestling, because I look at him and say, holy shit, that looked rough. But then they show a couple of angles. And you're like, oh, well, MJF took that as safe as he could. This was actually really well done. A wrestling move, when performed perfectly by two pros, should make you believe that the move hurt. You shouldn't be sitting there going, oh, look at how safe those working punches are. They're so great. No, you should be like, damn, those punches look awesome. It's kicking the shit out of them. So when this happens and people get excited, they feel, they're getting worked. The old work is the new work. You know, but no one was worried, with the dive, with the Rey Fénix dive, because it wasn't someone landing on their neck. When I saw Mox being stiff, I was like, oh no, something's wrong here. Something is wrong here. Anyway, after the neck breaker, Joe pulls out a table and he uranagis MJF through it, which he's just, again, just destroying the man. He pulls back the protective mat off the floor, pile drivers MJF onto it. MJF fights back, lands a Liger bomb on Joe, which was sick as hell. And here's where it starts. MJF low blows Samoa Joe. Pulls out the diamond ring. Paul Turner sees it, confiscates it. And as he's doing that, as he's distracted, Samoa Joe low blows MJF, sets him up for the muscle buster, connects, covers. MJF kicks out. I'm sure we're done. Kikina clutch gets locked in. Max is passing out. Out rushes Adam Cole to the ring as fast as he can. He jumps off the stage. Remember this. He jumps off the stage to cheer his friend on. And he stays alive. There's a ref bump. MJF chokes out Samoa Joe with the garrote, which I figure Adam Cole brought in. And he chokes him out and then applies a rear choke sort of to hide the rope so that the referee, when he comes to and gets into the ring, he doesn't see the rope. He just sees Samoa Joe getting choked out. And MJF wins. I could have done without a lot of this. After the match, Samoa Joe shakes MJF's hand because he's like, yeah, you cheated. You fucked with me. All right, respect. That's how this happens. And it makes sense for Joe to do that, right? But the Adam Cole thing, it's heavy-handed and it bogs stuff down. Like, really, up until that point, I was like, all of this rules. And then it just, for me, it deflates. It doesn't get me excited. I'm like, what are we doing? I don't even mind MJF cheating to win. It's part of his persona and he's been doing it for years. It doesn't bother me. It's just, I don't know. Is it getting too much to me? Is all this stuff, because honestly, everything on this show that turned me off had everything to do with the Brochacho angle. That's the vignettes, the promo coming in with the phone call and then Cole running out. And here's the worst part for this dumb angle, which I still don't like. Look, I'm consistent defending everything they do in the ring is tremendous. MJF in this match, tremendous. Got no complaints with his work. I thought he was particularly good. He was a great opponent in Joe. Everything clicked. I thought it was a fantastic main event. It's going to be one of the most memorable matches on Dynamite this year. But then it all gets bogged down with all this nonsense that we don't need. We don't need it. It's a silly angle. And your silly angle is then injuring people who aren't even in the match to try and make your silly angles work. Because Adam Cole, and you can see it when he jumps off the stage, he twists his ankle or something. And you can see it. He stumbles, he's like, ah. And for the rest of the evening, he's hobbling. He's limping. The latest news that we have as I'm recording this is that he went to a hospital and he's on a crutch now. He's got a crutch. Now your silly little angle with all this cutesy stuff has got guys hurting themselves. And all signs were pointing. And we're not doing spoilers here, folks, okay? We don't do Rampage spoilers here. But all signs were pointing for the Kingdom to become Ring of Honor tag team, to become number one contenders for the tag team titles, and then fighting MJF and Adam Cole, probably at WrestleDream, for the titles and maybe even winning. But now this is all up in the air. Because Adam Cole hurt himself to try and get over a stupid little angle. Now, this is when you know that your stupid little angles are stupid. When guys start getting hurt trying to pull them off. This is dumb. I know it's an accident. But let's just say we had decided to just have a wrestling match here without any goofiness. Adam Cole would not have run out, would not have twisted his ankle if we had just stuck to doing pro wrestling matches. I don't know. I don't know. And look, here's the thing. You know, we don't talk ratings much here. Tremendous rating for a show that was mostly focused, I would say 90% focused on pro wrestling, big matches. You get a tremendous rating, biggest in the demo since February. You start packing in the matches, you start getting big walk-ups. Imagine that. AEW sticking to what brought people to the dance. Pro wrestling. Putting on great matches with world-class superstars. Not in the WWE sense, in the Oxford Dictionary sense. Imagine that, and that is paying off dividends. It's putting more butts in the seats, and it's having more people play with their clickers. That sounded weird. Until they get to the right channel, which is TBS on Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights. What the hell am I doing to watch the show? I don't know what to tell you. And you can argue with me as much as you like in regards to, oh, well, you know, the skits and the vignettes, they're fun and they're minimal bullshit on that end creates this type of show that is really well received. People are into it. They're excited about it. They want more. I don't know. Gonna wrap it up there. Great, great, great show. Another successful outing in Arthur Ashe. Like, the quality of last night's show can't be denied. And this feels like the Dynamites I love. This feels like the Dynamites that we were getting at the start of the year 2023. Where every week I would sit on this review and scream into this very microphone, we are spoiled because we're getting tremendous matches. Five star, maybe not five star every week, but we're getting tremendous, excellent matches on a weekly basis. It's not necessarily the case with Dynamite anymore. Now we got a lot of angles. We got a lot of, you know, we got a lot of stories to tell. We were doing fine and we were telling stories just in another way. This was great. This is everything I love about AEW, right in this show. Everything. Tremendous main event. Tremendous opener, just tremendous stuff, up and down. Go check it out if you haven't already, if I haven't convinced you. But I'm going to convince you right now that I have to stop talking about AEW Dynamite, and we're going to wrap it up for today. There, I've convinced you. Join me on Sunday, for the AEW Collision review, which is what I am wont to do the next day of Collision. And of course, I will be back for the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper this week. There's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about. Trust you, me. Subscribe if you haven't already here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, or, you know, follow me on your favorite podcast application. Leave reviews, ratings, likes, subscriptions, all that good stuff. Look, we're done. I'll see you next time.